We just heard how California is responding to the war between Israel and Hamas, sending humanitarian aid to both Israel and Gaza, as the death toll of Palestinians has surpassed 18,000 lives, 70% of whom are said to be women and children. And that's according to the health ministry in Gaza. Of those who remain in Gaza, the United Nations believes roughly 85%, nearly 2 million people, are internally displaced and have been forced to move repeatedly in search of safety. And Palestinian Americans here at home have loved ones in Gaza. Bassem El-Khara is the executive director of the civil rights organization CARE, the Council on American-Islamic Relations in the Sacramento Valley. A Palestinian himself, Bassem joins us with how the community is coping and grappling with war abroad. Thank you for making the time.
Thank you for having me.
You know, Bassem, you've been with CARE for more than a decade in the Sacramento Valley. How have these past 10 weeks and counting been for you?
It's been a challenge. This is not our first rodeo. I mean, every few years there's a war on Gaza. But this time, it's different. I mean, this is the worst catastrophe for Palestinians since the Nakba, since 1948, where 750,000 Palestinians were ethnically cleansed and removed from their homes, and 450 towns and villages were ethnically cleansed. This time, you know, just the death toll with nearly 8,000 children. And this is the first genocide that's televised on social media, where you have citizen journalists that are live broadcasting this daily, where you're seeing mothers holding their dead children, and just the images, that heart-wrenching, that's just, you know, it's been a major challenge for me personally, because every night our time, I'm calling my relatives in the Gaza Strip to see who made it, who's alive, and we've lost dozens of family members. We can't even keep track of who's dead because we can't get a hold of most of them. We just look at social media to see, you know, that we look at the family names, but you even feel guilty doing that because so many Gazans have died and many of these families we know. And so it's just, it's, you know, there's no PTSD for Palestinians, just TSD. You know, it's just the trauma going through this and just worrying about loved ones and your people. It's a challenge of, you know, we never had before. And then seeing family members where there's, you know, before, I mean, now they're all like, we're from the southeast of Gaza, and all of them have fled. And this is the first thing, because we're not refugees. 80% of the Gazans are refugees from 1948. But all my entire family has now had to leave the southeast. And they're in Rafah and Yunis, and it just, people sleeping on the streets, everyone's sick, tainted water, whoever can get water. I mean, it's just horrific, horrific scenes that we're hearing about from loved ones. And then before that, before they left, they were splitting up, you know, the men and women. Some would take some children to one house, others would take to another house in case there was a bombing, so that some could survive. And in one incident, my cousin's son and his son were in one house, and it got hit, and they were killed, you know. And then there, you know, half of the family survived. It's just indescribable. Just the pain and anguish that, you know, just checking in with our loved ones daily. Just I can't describe.
I mean, how have you been able to stay in contact with them during this time?
WhatsApp, and for a while we lost all connection with them. But now it's just so spotty at times that, you know, you just kind of leave a voice note or you leave a message and then they'll just respond. It might take them days to respond if they can get internet. Some folks have international SIMs, and that's the way they're communicating with the outside world. But really just looking at kind of news outlets and just, you know, looking at the family names of who's been killed. And that's how, unfortunately, we're finding out. Sometimes it's Facebook groups. There's sometimes other family members that are in touch with certain segments of the family, and we're getting updates that way.
How is your organization supporting Palestinian Americans across the Sacramento Valley during this time, many who have very similar stories to yours and your families?
Just making sure that folks know their rights, that they can participate in protests, and just protecting their rights to be able to speak freely, and also engaging, because we saw after October 7th, we saw some school districts, we saw elected officials put one-sided statements and not recognizing the plight of the Palestinians. So kind of educating the community how to respond, and then also supporting the families that have lost loved ones. One of our community members, Ayman, he lost his father, four brothers, and two nephews in one attack. So many, almost every family from Gaza in this region has lost loved ones. And so just being there to support them, making sure that their voice is heard, during this conflict.
Going back to October 7th, when that attack happened, how did it impact you?
I mean, we knew that things were going to escalate pretty bad. I mean, what was interesting is that back in August, the IDF spokesperson said that increased settler terrorism, you know, is going to increase terrorism in the region. And so it was kind of people were expecting something was going to happen. Because in the West Bank, there was programs happening almost every day from these settlers, and which unfortunately were protected by IDF soldiers and Israeli police. And so in all the deaths that were happening in the West Bank, it was just something was bound to happen. I mean, occupation for this long and having the most right-wing regime, it was shocking. But October 7th was shocking. And we came out, and I came out immediately after that. And we've always been on the record condemning any attacks on civilians. And CARE has been doing that since 1994. Any attacks on civilians will never be justified, but just the horrific attacks, you know, and then seeing, on the other hand, seeing folks justify the massacres against Palestinians. And here in our local community, folks on social media, folks staying silent about the nearly 8,000 children that have been murdered. That's really, you know, it hurts. You know, at the same time, we're seeing, you know, allies in the Jewish community protesting around the country. You know, there's, you know, been civil disobedience on metro stations in New York, all, you know, protests at offices of elected officials. Our allies in the Jewish community have just, you know, really, it's been very uplifting to see that and to see their solidarity during this very difficult time.
Yeah, I mean, you have been instrumental and worked for years on building interfaith relationships. I have been to multiple conferences over the years when you were joined by Jewish rabbis like Rabbi Mona Alfi with B'nai Israel. Rabbi Alfi joined us last week at the start of Hanukkah and discussed how she was disheartened that interfaith relations have become strained, but conversations are continuing,
yes,
although difficult. Of course, painful as well. I mean, since you've been so instrumental in building these bridges as well, how challenging has this time been for you?
It has been challenging. You know, communication continues, but, you know, I think what we hope from faith leaders throughout the region is that during this time they speak out, and because they're powerful. They're powerful figures in our community, and when they speak on this issue, it can bring more healing and reconciliation between all communities. And so, while it's a challenge, we're going to continue the conversations, and hopefully we'll get through this.
You know, and in addition to interfaith relationships, you have collaborated and worked with elected and public leaders in the state and locally for years. I mean, as we just heard, the California Office of Emergency Services discussed delivering humanitarian aid to both Israel and Gaza. Have you been satisfied with the state's response during this time?
Yes. We appreciate CalUS and Governor Newsom for announcing the medical aid to the region, the medical aid to Gaza. What we hope from our elected officials is that they speak out for a ceasefire. I mean, this is a time that, unfortunately, our taxpayer dollars are being used to justify the massacres in Gaza. The bombs that are being dropped on Gaza are manufactured here. And on Tuesday, President Biden said, you know, he called it indiscriminate bombing of Gaza. And then on Wednesday, he said there's no red lines for Israel. So, you know, we give mixed messages, unfortunately. And so our elected officials here locally, you know, statewide and federally have the moral obligation to speak out, because this is being done in our name. This is being done with our bombs and our taxpayer dollars. And the whole world is watching. We talk about Ukraine, ending the occupation of Ukraine, and we see what's happening in Gaza and the West Bank. And so we really need, you know, we need our leaders to speak out. And the community, and I think the attack, you know, these attacks on Gaza has really changed not only the American Muslim community, but the Arab American community in realizing that all these years, elected officials, you know, saying that they support our community and they stand with our community, but at the same time justifying the massacres of our brothers and sisters openly. I mean, we're seeing elected officials haven't mentioned the word Palestinians since October 7th, not once, but have mentioned, you know, what happened to the Israelis on numerous occasions. And people are watching that. And there will be political consequences. I think people are very angry right now just seeing these horrific images daily. And it's going to change the, and folks are already talking about the 2024 election and Biden. It's impossible for Biden to pull off this election without the support of the Arab and Muslim community in the battleground states. We're talking about Michigan, Ohio, Florida, Pennsylvania, and other states. And so, you know, we hope that the elected officials hear the call of not only our community, but allies in the Jewish community that are fighting hard for a ceasefire, And those statements are important to us. And so we really hope that folks call for it immediately and not wait. And luckily here in, you know, our members of Congress have called for a ceasefire. Most of the congressional delegation from California have called for a ceasefire. But we hope others come on online as well.
You know, when you bring up President Biden, you joined a lawsuit, and it was filed exactly a month ago against President Biden and Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, Secretary of Defense Lloyd James Austin, in response to the escalating death toll of Palestinians in Gaza. I mean, you're among a handful of names in this lawsuit. What do you hope this federal complaint accomplishes?
That just puts pressure on the administration that, you know, that they are complicit in genocide, because they have not. They've given unconditional support. And as I mentioned, President Biden said there's no red lines. So they can use, you know, these bombs to bomb UN schools. They just bombed a UN school and celebrated. The video is going viral. And this is a school that they took over. And horrific footage came out today of another school where the Israelis went in, executed women and children, took them in. And this is the world is watching. These videos, and so they're blaming the United States because we have been greenlighting Israeli policies for so long, and so we need now leaders that have the moral courage to put pressure, and they've done it. And, you know, U.S. leaders in the past have put pressure on Israeli leaders for ceasefires to stop atrocities, whether it was in 1982 in Lebanon and other wars, but President Biden unfortunately has not taken that stance and has repeated lies over and over, despite the fact the 40 beheaded babies, after he mentioned it at the White House. 2 hours later, the White House said, you know, it wasn't true, after the Israeli military said it wasn't true. And then he still repeated it a few times after that. And that's in some of these horrific, you know, stories that came out were used to justify the attack on Gaza. And it was also interesting to see even leaders in Silicon Valley and folks in Wall Street coming out publicly supporting and justifying the genocide in Gaza. And so I joined this lawsuit where a Holocaust expert, a professor of Jewish history, wrote a brief. And the things you just see what the Israeli leaders are saying. They're calling for genocide openly. And so, you know, some folks are saying, no, well, this is not a genocide. I say they're openly calling for a genocide. It's their comments that are being used in this lawsuit. And so, you know, for me, I sued President Trump in 2017 for the Muslim ban. And now, you know, I'm suing President Biden. And it was interesting. I actually announced it at the California Democratic Convention. I said I never imagined, you know, that I'll be suing a Democratic president. But for us, our community, any leader, doesn't matter what political affiliation, if they are greenlighting the attacks on civilians, we're going to hold them accountable.
When I spoke with Rabbi Elfie and Rabbi Gosbaum, who represents Folsom and El Dorado Hills, I mean, you speak of genocide, which is a legal definition, and they have concerns of that as well when it comes to people who are Jewish. I mean, we're talking at an international and national level here, but on a very personal level, disagreements and debate can be very widely found, as you mentioned, thanks to social media, but they also take place in person among friends, family, and colleagues. Do you have advice about how to have these really difficult conversations?
Well, first, it's important to have these conversations. And sometimes you have to be careful where you have these conversations. If you have a boss that feels very strongly one way, in the workplace, you don't have as much rights. And so we've seen a lot of folks get fired from having these conversations, or folks get fired for tweeting or writing something on social media, nothing controversial, just tweeting about the plight of what's happening in Gaza and then getting fired. And so people have to be careful where they have these conversations. But these conversations, especially amongst family and friends, are needed. We as Americans, you know, when our taxpayer dollars are being used to do this, we need to have these discussions and talk about, you know, the moral underpinnings of what's happening. And it's only then, you know, we can, you know, make sure that this doesn't get repeated again against any people. This is not about the people of Gaza. You know, anytime there's a conflict around the world, we have to ask ourselves, you know, are we involved? Are we complicit? Are we preventing? And this is something that we need to work together as a nation to prevent civilians from being killed on all sides.
Bassem, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you.
Bassem El-Khara is the executive director of the civil rights organization CARE, the Council on American-Islamic Relations in the Sacramento Valley. A Palestinian himself, Bassem shares how the Palestinian community here at home across the Sacramento Valley is coping and grappling with war abroad. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.